This is Gail Morgan welcoming you to the Libertarian Counterpoint. Now, your host, James Just.
Thank you for joining me today. With me is John Cameron in the middle, Richard Fields on the other end. And gentlemen, let's hope we can talk better than I can. State-run education. Well, there we go. A perfect example of our state-run education here right in front of you is a... Well, state-run pre-K education has resulted in worse educational outcomes. They did a study in, Tennessee. Okay. A longitudinal study, so over 6 years. And at the end of this period, the kids who had pre-K are actually worse off in, not academically, they're even academically, but they're worse off in every other measure. You know, academically, they're just the same. So they doesn't boost them academically, but it hurts them in behavior problems. It hurts them in all the other educational issues that revolve around that. And it's actually not surprising. This is something we've known for a long time. There was a study, almost a decade ago, that showed that early academic training produces long-term harm. And so why we think that training these kids at 4 or 3 or 4 years old, starting the academic training, is going to produce, you know, mentally healthy adults is insane. And we're seeing that in the results of high suicide rates from our teenagers, high anxiety issues with, you know, with young adults. We're seeing these effects across the whole spectrum of society. And it's sad, to say the least.
I was going to joke about it being Tennessee, so we shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't use that as an example. But, you know, there are lots of, you know, individual cases where parents have educated their children very early in things, like, you know, people able to play chess at a high level at age 4, music prodigies, math prodigies, all the rest of that stuff. But every single example of when the government-run schools get involved, and it seems to result in, at best, even with not having them in a government-run school at an early age, and at worst, which is more usual, having their outcomes be worse than not in a government-run school. So we shouldn't be surprised. And there are a lot of countries that are well-respected because of their pre-university or pre-college educational system, Japan being one, where, you know, kids are kids up to a certain point, and then they, you know, are started on a formal path. They're basically little monsters, is the wrong word, little wild, playful animals. And then once they get to be a certain age, they don't have any expectations other than, you know, living joyful childhood lives and playing and, you know, making their parents' lives interesting. And then they start school and they do wonderfully well. So I think, you know, if we can get more education out of the hands of the government, and what they think their goals of education are, back in the hands of the parents who are responsible for the children, the better off we're going to be.
Richard? Oh, maybe Richard's frozen over there.
Richard, are you frozen? Richard's frozen. I've never seen him be that still before.
Richard's
don't you think?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting.
Text him and tell him maybe he knows he's frozen. I don't know.
We've kind of known this for a long time, that your one size fits none. Government healthcare, government education, right? It's one size fits none. We know it's one size fits none, but yet we continue to go down this same path. And at some point, we're going to have to decide it's time for a different approach.
Yeah, as I was starting to say before my internet connection froze up, the academic achievements of kids that go to a government-run preschool are better, slightly better, or the same up until about grade 3. And after grade 4, they actually go down. So the academic improvement does not last. And it's really because they're teaching to a test, like most.
It's frozen again. Yeah.
Yeah, he was talking about teaching to a test. And that's actually true. When you have politicians involved in the education thing, you have to quantify it, right? And you quantify it with tests. Mm-hmm. And you're never going to teach kids what they need to know when you're actually trying to just prove to some politician or to some bureaucrat that, yes, we've done a job. We've done our tasks. Here's our tasks. Our check boxes are complete. That means we've finished our job. We've educated the kids, but it's simply not true. You've told them to memorize names and dates, and that's not the same thing as an education.
We've known from the Montessori method for decades that teaching kids is, if kids can have fun while they're learning, they will not only learn more ultimately, but they'll also be more or better adjusted people as they grow older. They'll learn how to negotiate their differences in the playground as opposed to just following orders. Yeah. Learn how to be civilized as opposed to being automatons. And I think the thing to remember here is whenever you hear
while Richard's frozen, I'll talk about a personal example of Montessori until he gets unfrozen again. My daughter went to a Montessori preschool, and then she went into public school and didn't learn anything new until the third grade. So she had outpaced public education, or I hate to call it public education. Let's call it what it is, government-run education.
Government indoctrination.
Government indoctrination in preschool, in a Montessori environment. And we could have held her out of school for 4 years and put her in the fourth grade and, done better. And I just wish we would have kept her in Montessori, for a much longer period of time. I agree.
There's one group of people that does benefit.
Let me fill in for Richard, because I think I know what he's going to say. There's one group of people that does benefit from government-run education, and that's teachers' unions.
Well, and the politicians that those teachers' unions feed. So, let's not forget that side of the equation as well. But there is maybe a solution for that. Parents can take back this control if we can get genuine school choice, not just charter schools. I mean, genuine school choice where students and parents and their teachers can actually get together and create a learning environment that's appropriate for each individual student. If we're not trying to educate the individual student in front of you, what are we doing? Hmm. I mean, is that not the goal, is to teach little Johnny or little Sarah or whatever and teach them?
I hope I have to get my height, man.
To become the best them they can be. Instead, we're trying to teach them to become the best workers they can be or the best engineers they can be. No, we should try to teach them to become the best they can be. And whatever that is, be it engineers or teachers or, whatever, coders, whatever it is they want to be, that's what our education should be guided to instead of whatever it is now. I'm not even sure what their goal is anymore. I don't even know if they know.
The goal in government schools is to teach kids to be followers of authority, period.
Mm. Yeah. And then, if we look at successful educational models around the world, as the year after year after year, we drop in compared to other nations, and the idea that we should compare ourselves to other nations is kind of evil in my book. But, in other countries, they have different tracks for people that are going to on to university than people who are going into a trade. They allow people to leave at age 16, for example, in the UK, although I think they are backsliding on that. And they go to what they call a college, which is basically a trade school. And other people go to university who, need to get some kind of fancy degree so that they can pass all the bars that government regulatory agencies set so that they can get a job as an attorney or an accountant or, in the medical field. But those are much more successful because not everybody, and the average, in years and years and years ago, when people went to college, their average, or university, whatever you call it, their average IQ was much higher than now. What they've had to do in order to make college accessible for everybody is lower the standards so that people who really shouldn't be in college, that don't have the skill to master the things that we mastered when we went to school, back when Richard and I went to school, a Bachelor of Science degree in business administration meant something. And now, you know, they want people who are secretaries or administrators to have a bachelor's degree. Really, most decent jobs now in large organizations want you to have a master's in something. And the question is why? There is no reason. It's just to feed the education government monopoly that's going on.
Yeah, and actually, that's an interesting point. You talk about the monopoly because the education system, it used to teach a handful of things, and now it teaches all kinds of things that you actually could probably better learn outside of a university, right? If you want to learn women's studies or something, you can actually probably learn that better outside of a university system, and you can definitely learn it cheaper outside of a university system, right? That's just a no-brainer. But yet the university systems have taken this upon themselves to teach these cultural issues rather than teach academic issues, and it's a strange thing. But it also talks about, it highlights an inflation of educational budgets. There's a proposed Hoboken High School. A new high school in Hoboken is attached to a sports complex for some reason. And, you know, it's a complete waste of money. The school district can't really support it. The schools that already exist are plenty big enough. It's just a big boondoggle. But of course, because education budget's attached to it, it becomes an easier sell. And these things, these politicians they want to be able to, you know, cut that ribbon and pat themselves in the back for having these new, brand new sparkly projects. But while they let the system itself rot, it's a horrible thing. But yet, here we go. Another example of misplaced priorities.
I'm sorry I know you're running the show. Are we going to talk more specifically about school choice, or are we going to lump that all in together, or what?
We kind of lumped it in together, but we're halfway through the show now. So, I mean,
I want to quickly talk about that. I absolutely agree on the whole
school
thing.
Choice is actually a solution to this as well, because if we pull the support from these public schools, they're no longer going to have the money to do this.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think the bottom line is the enemy of education is monopoly, just like the enemy of quality in any good or service is a monopoly. Monopolies, and all monopolies are either government supported or government allowed or government sponsored. There are no natural monopolies. Doesn't happen. And education is a prime example. It's a government sponsored
I agree with Richard, and while he's frozen, I do want to talk about getting rid of that monopoly through school choice and the voucher program. Whenever polls are taken of, do you favor a program that will give you part of the money that the state is supposedly spending on your child, not all of it, but part of it, so that you can spend it sending them to school where you want, people of color at about an 80% plus rate, whatever survey you look at, are the people who are most in favor of this kind of program. And the reason for that is simply they are the ones who are living in areas with the horrible schools, with a monopoly, and they don't have the tools, they don't have the funds, they don't have the money to take their kids out of those schools and put them in a better school, whereas rich people do. So, you know, if the politicians would actually listen to the people that they are serving, supposedly, the people that vote to put them in power, school choice would have happened a long time ago. And I think it's that floodgate's going to open pretty darn soon, especially after the debacle of the pandemic.
Well, it's opening now. That's the silver lining of the lockdowns, is people have figured out that homeschooling, the school choice, the charter schools, the whole nine yards work better than sending your kids off to daycare with regimentation, which is what public schools, government schools have actually become. So there's a huge upswelling of support for competition in education, particularly homeschooling and private schooling. And that's a great thing.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing.
I actually prefer the term diversity in education rather than competition, because we're not actually competing. We're actually just trying to find the best method to teach your individual child. And whether it's Montessori school for one person, a more traditional school for another, or some hybrid solution for a different kid, it doesn't actually matter. They're not actually competing with each other. They're just offering different solutions that are appropriate for your individual child. And so it doesn't actually have to compete. You just have to have options, so the parents can choose what is best for their child. And those other places will have to get better by their nature if they want to survive. I mean, that's not even competition. That's just the way life is.
Yeah, it's competition, but competition, right? Competition makes diversity possible. When you have a monopoly, there is by definition no diversity. It's all one model.
Yes, but I think when we talk about competition education, people think of like a football game where you've got teams smashing against each other, competing against each other, rather than it's actually just creating opportunities for us to create a stronger system, a more diverse system, for that actually feeds the individual child rather than this mythical average child that doesn't actually exist. And I think that's kind of what we need to be careful about. And the way to do that, you know, the way to prevent things like this stupid boondoggle of a high school that you shove a high school into a sports complex so you can afford to build the sports complex you want, is you take away that the resources, you take away that income power, then those kind of things can't happen anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed.
Who needs a football field on top of the roof of the high school anyway?
Yeah, I when I read that, I thought at first it was a joke, you know, because there's so much. I'm not going to say fake news, because all news now is pretty much fake. But I thought, really, in Hoboken, in New Jersey, because it's my understanding that in a lot of areas in New Jersey, just like areas in Sacramento, you know, that they're these schools are a waste of students' time. And to think that somehow, like Richard said, if I'm going to put a sports complex of football, I think football and basketball, I think there's a pool. I don't remember all the details from the
hockey rink. There's a whole nine yards. Yeah, it's
on
a whole
on top of a high school. Somehow this is a wonderful thing. And I'm guaranteeing you that if they, and it's my understanding that this thing is going to fail to pass anyway, they're not going to build it. But I guarantee if you built it to government specs and people ever fill that football stadium, shortly after the game started, the football game would be playing at ground level, no matter how high it was built, because it would be to government specs.
Okay. Well, let's talk about government specs and the misallocation of government funds. Recently, there was a bridge collapsed in Pennsylvania. It was a big national news. Luckily, I don't think anybody was killed. It was a few people were hurt, but no one was killed. But we're finding out that the fuel tax that was meant to fund these bridge repairs actually went to the state troopers to fund, you know, Big Brother. Now, the government's job supposedly is to create standards and make sure that, you know, their own stuff is properly maintained, but yet they can't maintain their own stuff. But you'll tell you that you have to cut your grass or get a fine, but they don't have to maintain their bridges. And, you know, or your potholes, but they want to build these boondoggles. They're perfectly happy to build boondoggles, but they won't fill your potholes. They won't maintain the bridges. And they'll take the money that they say are allocated for these bridges and allocate them to something else for some other reason. And
got to fund the highway robbers. The state police absolutely have to do that.
Well, you'd be talking about
safe, don't you know?
Maybe you're talking about the highway robbers in Kansas and in Southern California, but I'm certain it happens everywhere. Yeah, and I was thinking about, I don't know why this came up on my walk with my dog this morning, but I was thinking about what, when people say we need government, you know, government's a necessary evil. And I'm, just about every example I could come up with, and I ran through about 100, could best be performed. All these things that we let the powers that be and have could best be performed by individuals voluntarily getting together and coming to an agreement. You're talking about, you know, police forces. There are security firms that can do policing jobs. Fire, their fire departments can be privately funded and run. And we've seen some cities do it and save basically 80 cents on every dollar. Roads until very recently in this country's history were private. And, you know, the big push for interstate highways and everything was, you know, basically took road decisions out of the hands of the individuals. I mean, we see it now coming back in the Bay Area with these, you know, fast pass lanes and all the rest of that. Put every single decision possible back into the hands of the people. They will make good decisions. And, you know, if there ever is an invasion from Mars, then, you know, maybe we might need a space force. But I'm just thinking all these things that we've somehow become used to the government supposedly taking care of. One, they don't take care of it. Two, I think we just lost Richard. Two, if they do take care of it, like in the case of the bridge money, they take the money we give them for one thing and spend it on some kind of boondoggle. So I would like to see just about everything that we as a libertarian give the government power to do so they can do in a very poor way, put back in the hands of people.
Yes, if they allocated their money remotely, fiscally, maybe they'd have an argument. But we have decades upon decades now, 100 years of them. They can't do it. They simply refuse to properly prioritize their spending. So at some point, we have to realize that it's us is the problem. Us giving them the power, giving them the money is actually the problem.
Yeah. And if you want to talk about bridges, we're all either in Northern California, we're in Northern California. There's something called the Bay Bridge that runs from Oakland-ish over to San Francisco-ish. And they had to rebuild that sucker three times. They took down the old one. And then when they put up the new one, they discovered that it wasn't going to work right. And so, you know, they had to fix it. And then they discovered that when they fixed it, it still wasn't right. And they had to do it again. And what was originally supposed to cost like $2 billion, the whole project ended up being north of $10 billion. And this is a constant thing in government, and government-run projects everywhere are bullet train debacle.
Billion to now, what, $100 billion now is what they're saying?
To go from podunk to podunka. And, and you know, just we have a here in Sacramento, a light rail system, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. My brother told me, like, right after it happened, he said, you look at the money spent on this light rail. You could buy every single one of the riders who was going to ride on, foreseeable riders, who was going to ride typically on this light rail thing, a brand new Cadillac and give it to them for less money than it would cost to put this freaking light rail system in place. And I believe them, because the government's job is not to efficiently deliver goods and services. It's to inefficiently deliver goods and services so that it can ask for more money, so that it can expand its power and pay off the people that got it elected. But when people realize that's actually the job of government, stated or unstated, maybe we'll start making some better decisions.
Richard?
Yeah, well, and also to make sure...
No, man, the internet gods have got Richard's number today. I tell you,
I would check and see whether that, his internet access is going through a left wing router or something.
I know,
one of the wings.
Yeah. Government run router. There you go.
Yeah, Google's got your number over there, Richard.
Heaven forbid we'd have slower service than dial up.
Oh, we'd still have dial-up if it was a government-run internet. You know, we would. We would still be on dial-up. We just would. But the IRS now, the same government, the same government that complains about big tech, you know, having your data, is now wants the IRS to give you a selfie to access your IRS account. Now, these people don't care about your data. They don't care about your privacy, because what's more dangerous, the government having your data or some guy who wants to sell you shoes having your data? I mean, let's be honest. Which one of these things is actually more dangerous to you?
My vote would be that government's more dangerous, you know, because if somebody's just trying to sell me shoes, I can just say no. If the IRS wants something from me, I can hire a very expensive lawyer to negotiate down my prison sentence. I want the guy that wants to sell me shoes. And the thing about that is that we don't have to go to the website that wants to sell us shoes. We don't have to use we don't have to sign up to Instagram or Facebook and I'm not pointing fingers at you individually because they're all the same. We don't have to use those services. You know, we choose to use them. And if you choose to use them, you just have to realize that your data is at risk and it's going to be sold. There are services out there that don't track. Well, they track, but they don't sell your data to anybody. They still track it. Use one of those. Use a VPN. I mean, there are all sorts of ways around this. But once the government's involved in it, you have no freaking choice. I mean, this debacle we had in California over was it, $30 billion in fraud, in unemployment in the state of California during the pandemic that they're admitting to. And they had people do selfies and use their make sure it matched up to their driver's license. And did it do any good? No, it didn't. So no matter what they do, they're still idiots and it's not going to help.
Almost afraid to kick it over to you again, Richard. But you got something. Oh, he's frozen again. See, there we go.
Again. Yeah.
Well, this is, it's the crazy thing though. You know, I'm going to give a caveat here. The problem is a lot of people are worried about it. You know, the government's going to get your selfie data, facial recognition, but the reality is they already have all that data. Hmm. And so, you know, you're right to be afraid of the government having all this data, but the sad reality is they already have it or the system wouldn't work.
Hmm. Yeah,
you've got your ID, you took your picture, they've got your ID, you placed your pictures all over social media. They can already buy this stuff from the same marketers you're afraid of. So they just buy it anyway, like anybody else. And so in a sense, the barn door is already open, the horses are already gone. And now we got people complaining, hey, we shouldn't open these barn doors. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, we shouldn't be opening the barn doors. The horses are already gone. It's already out. Everything's already done.
Yeah, I think it's discrimination against old farts like me that haven't figured out how to take selfies.
But what happened? Well, there is a point to that.
You know, I hold the camera out there and it's just, it never shows me young with long hair. I don't know what's going on, man.
Well, there is kind of the point to that. What about the 90-year-old woman who doesn't know, or you know, 90-year-old person who doesn't have social media or a regular cell phone? You know, they're still using mail and the landline. What do they do? Do they have to call and deal with the phone? Yeah, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I guess call and be on hold for 16 hours. That's
God. Yeah, but actually, there is some good news in this area too, because I always think that. I like to read newspapers from foreign countries, and I won't, you know, give them a plug, but in the UK, they're running stories in their major newspapers, and they actually have newspapers that people read in the United Kingdom, unlike whatever we have here. A lot of folks are going back to the old dumb phones. You know, because they're realizing how much time and energy they spend involved in all of this stuff, which basically desocializes them. Social media is not social media, it's antisocial media. Social is when you sit in a coffee house and you're talking to somebody 5 feet away, or you make a phone call and you hear the tone of voice, or in some cases what we're doing, you know, because we're doing this remotely. And people are designed to not only you know, see the words, but hear the tone of voice and see the facial expressions and understand the words as words.
Yeah, and it's our time to go. We got to get out of here, John. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us today. And we will see you next week. And please remember, love everybody.
Thank you for watching the Libertarian Counterpoint Show in Sacramento, Channel 17 on Comcast. Each Thursday at 8 p.m. and each Monday at 5:30 p.m. for the Knuckleheads of Liberty. Also on YouTube, Facebook, and podcasts everywhere.